This presentation is on mystery. Mystery is a very important aspect to have in our life if we want to live from our hearts, because just most broadly, we go in our heads and we always have a lot of busyness in our minds if we don't allow mystery into our life. And if we can allow the quality of mystery to be present in our life, it actually allows our mind to relax around trying to understand everything. I want to begin this presentation by sharing a story. And this is a story of that happened to me a few years ago. I was on a run in the hills near Dalesford, which is an old gold mining area in Victoria. And I was by myself and I was running through the bush, and lots of bush tracks where the miners used to go, and every now and then there'd be deep holes in the ground, old mines. And I found myself running up along the creek one day, and on the side of the bank there was a big hole in the side of the creek bank. And it was obviously somebody had dug a tunnel in there. And as I ran past, I was curious and I stopped and I briefly looked in, and it was pitch black inside. And I thought, wow, that's frightening. In there, there's probably deadly spiders, deadly snakes, wild wombats, and dangerous blood-biting bats, or cave-ins just waiting to happen. And I shuddered, and then I kept on running. And as I was running on, I started to think about this cave of blackness and darkness as a metaphor in my life for the parts of my life that I don't understand, the areas that I don't know, you know, what to do, that I'm unfamiliar with in my life, and what my relationship to those areas is, you know. If I step outside of my regular routine and the things that I'm used to doing, then I'm in this kind of dark space. And so by means of a personal challenge, I decided that on the way back, I'd actually stop and go inside the cave as a way of confronting going into the unknown in my life. So on the way back, I stopped and I had another look in the cave, and I paused for a moment because nobody knew where I was, and I thought, you know, whatever happens in there, I'm alone. If the cave caved in, nobody would ever find me probably, because wouldn't have a clue where I was. So I plucked up some courage and I stepped into the darkness of the cave. It was only, my entrance was probably about not much more than a meter wide. I had to crouch down to get in, and then it opened up. And I stepped in and I braced myself ready for the attack of the wild wombat, the dangerous snakes or whatever was going to get me. And not surprisingly, nothing happened. Except that over the next couple of minutes, my eyes started to adjust to the light, the dim light, and I started to be able to see inside the cave. And what I could see was dirt walls, dirt floor, you know, just a regular cave, a few rocks lying around, and that was it. The cave went further in, but I didn't go any further in. I decided I'd challenge myself enough that day. And so I got out and ran back, kind of chuffed with myself for having, you know, addressed the challenge. But I think that for me, it's a really big metaphor in my life for when I come up against needing to do something that I've never done before, like ring somebody and talk about some aspect of my business particularly. But it could be in my relationship as well, stepping into territory that I'm not so comfortable in or not so familiar with. Very similar feeling for me of stepping into the dark. And mystery, stepping into mystery, really. And I think there's four aspects of mystery in our lives, generally speaking, and I'm going to talk about each of those four aspects in this presentation. And the first aspect is avoiding mystery by trying to understand everything. And what this does is that it causes disconnection and mental confusion. And conversely, ceasing to try to understand everything leads us to inner peace and openness or spaciousness. The second aspect of embracing mystery is ceasing to live in the stories about the future. And these stories cause us a lot of anxiety and also disappointments. And when we accept mystery in this way into our life, it allows us to live more easily in this present moment. And our lives become a lot richer when we do that. And the third aspect of having mystery in our life is that it helps us to stop avoiding the unfamiliar, to stop not taking risks, to stop staying safe and avoiding the new, the unfamiliar. And obviously this opens the door for a lot more freedom for us to grow and to explore new things. And then the fourth aspect that makes mystery important in our lives is that it's actually a gateway to spirituality. And the term that we know of is the mystic. A mystic is a person who embraces mystery in their life and actually uses it as an aspect of spirituality. So we'll go back to the first point, which was how we avoid mystery in our life by trying to understand everything. And this is a very common cause of mental suffering. It causes us a kind of a mental anguish in that we don't get any peace because we're constantly trying to figure out what's going on. You know, how come this has happened? How long is this going to go on for? What's going to happen next? You know, why did this relationship end? Why didn't I get this success, this job, whatever it is? And doing this is a product of this Western scientific attitude that we have that sees everything like a machine, sees life as like a machine. Because if a machine is broken, the first thing that you need to do is figure out why it's broken, what's broken on it. And so we do that with our life on the assumption that if we could understand it, then we could fix it. If we could understand it, then we could take control of it. But it's not necessarily true. And in fact, when it comes to healing, trying to understand what's wrong gets us stuck. And it gets us stuck because when we're trying to figure something out like that, we actually go out of the experience of being and into our heads. So we actually disconnect from the source of where the transformation needs to happen. And so it's very useful to be able to let go of needing to understand. And the affirmation that we encourage here is, I release the need to understand. If you're taking notes, it's a great one to write down and practice this week. I release the need to understand. And there's so many things in our life that we actually don't understand but function quite well. You know, our computers. We have no idea what would be inside a computer, or let alone, for most of us, coding, computer coding or whatever. And, you know, like somewhere in your computer, there's an atom vibrating. Yes, no, yes, no. I've got no idea how that would work. And sometimes I think about, you know, Silicon Valley, where they develop all these new computers and stuff like that, and what that must take, you know, for people to be able to imagine the next step on from where we are, like to make a hard disk that's got twice as much information as we've ever done before. I'm told that you have to have a certain, there's an age limit in those places where they develop these new technologies, because as soon as somebody, say, develops a hard disk or a stick that's got so many gigabytes memory, they get stuck on that. And so it's so hard for them to imagine going to the next level. So they have to get the next generation of youth to come in and say, we want you to double the memory on this memory stick. And they can do it because they don't have the preconceived idea about what's possible based on what they know. So they have that aspect of mystery about them. And, you know, just to point out an aspect of this mystery that allows us to move forward is that we can't actually think and feel at the same time. So as humans, we're always functioning by either thinking or feeling. So when you're listening to this presentation, probably most of your energy is on thinking and trying to understand it. But maybe after the presentation, just the energy that comes through in the presentation will be actually what you remember, was how you were feeling when you were listening to this, rather than what you were actually hearing. And hopefully that's the energy that will be there present to move you into letting go of trying to understand everything and just relax a bit and open up your mind to being informed by other dimensions. Now this kind of not needing to understand, not needing to figure it out, is counter to the education that most of us had. Because, you know, put your hand up if you got good marks for not knowing at school. The whole school education process is driven at trying to find the answer, trying to figure things out. And so the idea of allowing yourself not to understand is counter to how we've all been educated. And yet it's a very wise thing to do, as you will appreciate, no doubt, more and more as we go through this presentation, the value of not understanding. And you know, like we might talk about the wisdom of not needing to understand. It also brings up the difference between knowledge and experience. So you can have somebody that knows a lot of facts or a lot of information, but actually isn't very wise, that actually hasn't experienced life all that fully and ripened the fruit, so to speak, to brought us to maturity. We really need to have the experiences in our life. And in the personal development work that we do about opening our hearts and connecting, it helps to understand, because it kind of gives us permission to allow ourselves to drop into our feeling self if we can understand a bit about it. But ultimately, the journey is one that we have to walk. The journey is one that we have to go on within ourselves, go inside and feel what we need to feel. So there's this vast chasm between the world of thinking, which is where we are when we're trying to understand something, and the world of experience, which is where we are when ultimately we're going to know who we really are. Because who you are is not a thought, it's not an idea, it's not a concept, it's an experience that you have to have. And if you can't feel, you won't find out who you are. And if you don't go looking in the right place, you won't find the right answer. If you go looking in the area of trying to figure things out, you're just going to create mental anguish for yourself and get stuck. So you have to look in the right place, and looking in the right place means letting go of that drive to try to figure everything out, allow mystery, and that allows us then to drop into our hearts and experience what's actually unfolding in this moment and be present with that. And that takes us on a journey that always, always will take us home to peace and to love and to wholeness. So if we look also at procrastination, we'll see the same kind of thing again, is that most of us, when we're procrastinating about it, we're in our heads, we're trying to figure out, what should I do? And we don't just want to know what the next step is, we want to know what all of the steps are. Trying to understand and overwork it, and then we don't take the first step. Or else when we live from our hearts, we take the first step, and the first step is often into the dark. Like going into that cave, it takes that first step, stepping out of where we are, what's familiar, what's comfortable, into the unknown. And one of the drivers of trying to understand everything is trying to get into control. And that's actually a reaction away from feeling powerless. It is a very common driver of problems in our life, and most of us have difficulty sitting with powerlessness. But the truth is that we live in a lot of powerlessness. There's a lot going on that we are not running, that we don't have any control over. For instance, our death. None of us actually know when we're going to die. In our day, we get up and we go to work or whatever. We have no idea what's actually going to happen. When you turn the TV on, you have no idea what image is going to be presented to you in that moment. And you have no control over it. Now you have little control over most of your life, in fact. And yet, you've made it this far. That's the good news. You know, and that's the consolation, is that we actually have, we've done okay. And it's actually been like this all the way along. We live in mystery all of the time. We don't know, we don't even know what's going to happen in the next 1 minute. We live in the darkness of that cave, and it just becomes illuminated as we go. And so often we go in our heads and we start trying to figure things out as a way of avoiding being in that powerlessness place of not knowing. So I prefer to think that we go by the grace of God, that in fact life is supportive of us if we let go of our attempts to control it, and we listen to our hearts and we act from a deeper place in ourselves. My experience is that life kind of rallies around me and supports me in taking me to happiness and to success. Why do I say that? Because over the 20 years or so that I've been working with people, journeying, helping them to journey deep inside, in every single example, experience, what I've witnessed is that when we go deep, 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 deep down inside, we discover peace. We discover a place of calmness, a place of love. And so my understanding is that that's who we really are. That's our true nature. And so when we live, when we let go of the controlling intellect and the mind, and we listen to our heart and we allow ourselves to go deep inside and we act from that place, the results of that are goodness, because peace and love give rise to happiness and to goodness. And so there's this kind of flow out into our life from this deep place in our hearts of goodness that we can actually trust. We can trust that. What tends to make things go astray is that when we get frightened, then we grasp, we try to take control, we shut down, we contract, and we close off from that loving life force energy that has the potential to create goodness in our life, and then things kind of go astray. So when it comes to understanding things, my recommendation is that we have like a mystery sack on our back, an imaginary mystery sack. When you come across something that just totally bamboozles you, like how your partner thinks. Just put it in a mystery sack. Just let it go. Or, you know, there's so many things we have no idea. Why is the sky blue? Why is the sunset red? What causes waves on the ocean? What causes a swell? You know, there are so many questions that we never stop to ask. How come a fish that's born on one side of the world can swim all the way across to the other side of the world, find the right river, go up the river and breed, and then swim all the way back again? How can a fish or a bird manage to do that? It's a miracle. There are so many things that we just don't understand, and we probably never will. So we just have a mystery sack, and we just put things in the mystery sack and let it go when it's a mystery. And I find that just by kind of validating this mystery aspect in our life, it gives us this place to unhook from the grasp that it can have on us that drives this relentless thinking. So the second aspect of the importance of having mystery in our life is that it helps us to drop the stories about the future and the past. So why would we want to do that? Why would we not want to live in our heads and in the world of the stories, the fantasies? The main reason why we wouldn't want to be doing that all the time is that this moment is actually all that exists. And so when we're in the stories, we're missing our life. You could be so engaged in telling yourself stories about what happened in the past or what could happen in the future that you actually miss this moment that you've got right now. And so many of us, when we grow up, we look back and our kids have grown up and we missed a lot of the time that we had with them because we were so preoccupied with the stories that we were running in our mind. Most of the stories, of course, never happen. And sometimes our bodies can get sick and diseased because we're not listening to the messages that are coming from our bodies because we're so busy making up stories in our heads. People who live in this world of stories get into a lot of drama. And the drama is characterized by having massive highs and massive lows. They get thrown around from pillar to post because they're not actually grounded to what's going on in the present moment. Instead, they're all the time extrapolating out of the present into the future, making up these stories that generate a lot of emotion that actually doesn't relate to what's going on. And so it causes us a lot of stress, a lot of unnecessary emotional tiredness, fatigue, when living in the present moment makes us more in touch, more present, gives us more energy and makes us more effective. People who live in their heads also often find it hard to connect with other people because they're not connected in themselves. And in emotional intelligence areas, it's been shown that people with the highest level of emotional intelligence, which largely involves being aware of what's going on within us, find it easiest to make the best relationships. They connect easily with other people. So how connected we are in ourselves determines to a large extent how well we can connect with other people. We also make silly mistakes when we're off and not present. We forget things. we mess things up. You know, have you ever driven home from work and ended up at the old place you used to live instead of your new house? Or ever driven home from work and suddenly got home and gone, oh, how did I get here? I hope I stopped at all the lights. I hope I didn't run anyone over on the way home because I can't remember any of it. You know, and that could be a metaphor for a large part of our life that we're actually not present and experiencing it as it's happening. Very dangerous in many ways. So we also have trouble making decisions when we're in this world of stories because we can't actually feel what the right thing to do is. And there's been numerous studies done with people that have had brain injuries where they've lost their capacity to register their emotions, and they found they can still deduct things very logically, but they can't actually make a choice, can't make decisions, because we make decisions based on what we're feeling, and then we rationalise that, we validate that with logic. And most importantly, when we live in this world of stories, we don't get to penetrate deeply into the core of who we really are. We live on the surface, and that surface is very frail and very vulnerable to other people's acceptance and approval. If other people don't like me, if other people, they get angry at me or disapprove of me, and I don't know who I am at a deeper level, it'll throw me around all over the place. And we'll make up these stories about what they're thinking about me and get lost in all of that, and it's totally irrelevant to who I am in the moment. But like I was saying before, if we don't look in the right place, we don't get the right answer. If we're looking for our sense of self from trying to get everything to go exactly how we want and get everybody to like me, then I'm going to be totally neurotic very shortly and just totally stressed out. So it's really important that we learn to drop all of the stories that we make up and instead start to connect inside deeper and deeper. And having mystery in our life allows us to let go of the stories when we really don't know what's going on. You know, like if your best friend suddenly stops ringing you, you might make up a story that's based on your own paranoia, which is, you know, I can't have a good friend or people don't like me or whatever. Whereas, you know, your best friend might have just gone to hospital and be really needing your support. But the reality is we don't actually know. And so rather than going to one story or another, when we're in situations like that where we don't actually know what's going on, we just need to let it go. Like I had a client today who's got a book that she's going to get published. She's saying about when she sent the book off to the publisher to get it read, she had this, who was in England, you know, on the other side of the planet, she had this period where she didn't know what kind of a response she was going to get. And she would go into the stories of, you know, he's going to hate it, it's going to be crap, nobody's going to like it, I'm going to be a failure. And all of that stuff just creates so much trauma and so much difficulty for us to handle, and it's all coming out of fantasy. And instead of being able to live in mystery, we tend to make up a story. And because most of us are afraid of mystery because we can't control it, we tend to make up scary stories, and so we're just traumatizing ourselves unfairly. And you know, we live in a world where we want instant responses. The response times are getting shorter and shorter and shorter. You know, like 100 years ago, people would write a letter, say from Australia to England, send it off. It'd take, I don't know, 6 months to get there. They'd get the reply, another 6 months to get back to your loved one. It'd be a year before you heard back from your mum or your dad or whatever. You know, and that was... hopefully the ship wouldn't sink along the way, if it was mugged by pirates or whatever, you know. And then we've got aeroplanes and things, so we could write a letter and it could be flown over there, so it might take a week or so to get there. I don't know if you remember as a kid writing those aerograms. It'd take about a week to get there, and then you get another week if they write straight back. There's a 2 week turnaround, gone from a year to 2 weeks, pretty good. And then, you know, we've got faxes, so then you could fax it over and it'd get there almost straight away, and you might get an answer back the next day. And then we've got emails, so you type it out and the person could be sitting on their computer and respond almost instantly. And SMS, they don't even have to be in their home anymore, they could be out on the golf course and you could get an instant answer back. And so one of the effects of that is that we are becoming less and less familiar with sitting in mystery. We want it all instant answer, instant answer. And that space of mystery is disappearing out of our life because of this instantaneous nature of things. And that makes it actually hard for us when we are in mystery to be there and relax into it because it becomes unfamiliar to us, which I'll come to in a second. So there's lots of benefits of living in the present, and that is that when we live in the present, which is mostly a mystery because we don't know what's going to happen next. And that reminds me of one of my favourite lunar cartoons is the guy, he walks in and there's a crystal ball on the table and the wizard's sitting there with a pointy hat on, and the guy sits down and he says to the wizard, "Tell me about my present." So many of us want to know what's going to happen in the future, but for me personally, I want to try and become present again, come back into my body and experience this moment fully. And what we find when we practice being in the present moment is that the quality of gratitude rises up from within us spontaneously. That when we live in this present moment, we start to feel more and more grateful for our life. And we recognize all of the good things that we actually are very blessed to enjoy. And that's a common experience for living in the present moment. Things seem to flow better. We're more in touch. So there just seems to be a flow and an ease that happens when we're in the present moment. We process our emotions more easily and more calmly. If we don't go from the experience that we have into the stories, and we just stay with the emotion and we locate where it is in our body and we breathe, what we find is that energy resolves itself. And that's what healing is, with as greater ease as it can be. But so many of us, we kind of walk through life backwards and we project the past onto the future. And so if we've been wrestling with an emotional issue most of our life, we just assume that it's going to be there for the rest of our life. We take what's been in the past, because it's been there for a long time, we assume it's going to take a long time to get over it. But it's actually not true. It's a false assumption, because the future does not have to be the same as the past. If you learn something new today, then your future could be radically different than your past. It might have taken you 10 years to get here, struggling with some emotional issue, and if you get the right answer, you get the way to work with it, then you could resolve that very, very quickly. And we see that in the workshops that we run all the time. In 3.5 days, people resolve issues they've been carrying around 10, 20 years and assume that it was going to take a long time to get over it. So we become more and more trusting of life and at ease with life when we live in the present moment, because we start to get a sense of the flow of things, the way that they unfold. We connect more easily with people and we get along more harmoniously. And life is filled with richness. So we experience more colours, more vividness in our life when we live in the present moment. And that's what something that really outstanding, it grabs our attention, you know, like a beautiful sunset or the smell of a beautiful flower. It just stops us for a moment from the busyness in our minds, and we just come in the present moment and we suddenly experience the richness of this moment. It's also now, so there's studies showing that our body actually functions more effectively when we live in the present moment. Remembering that when we go in the stories, they actually take us out of the present. But when we drop the stories, we come back in the present, we find that our immune system functions more effectively. Everything goes up. We heal more quickly. Generally, we do things, we function more effectively. But when you're in the present, you're much less likely to make a mistake. If you think about your mistakes, they very often happen because you weren't actually paying attention to what you were doing. Like I'd say, probably 50 to 80% of car accidents happen because the person who was driving the car wasn't in the car at the time. Their awareness was somewhere else. They were daydreaming, they were off on a story instead of being in the present moment. And so if you live in the present moment, you'll find you make much fewer mistakes and you remember things far more clearly. And you achieve things with more ease. So I'm not arguing that we shouldn't have a cognitive mind, you know, a brain. I kind of am attached to my brain. And I appreciate it for what it can do. But the important point about our cognitive intelligence is that, and our brain particularly in that, is that it should be the servant rather than master. And that's a major problem that we've made, that our cognitive mind, logic, reason, rationality, we've made that master. So we've made decisions in our society and globally based on what's financially sensible. Pull up the railway tracks in America is a classic example. They sold off the railway lines, privatised things. The oil company bought the railway lines and pulled them up. So there's now no railway lines in America virtually. And yet that's what all the great westerns that we watched were about. The cowboys and Indians are always building the railway lines across America. But, you know, so often we make decisions based on what's rational and reasonable instead of what's sensible from our heart. And I think that a lot of the global difficulties that we have are because we've lost touch with the connection with the land and with nature and with life. And we've looked at life as an objective thing through our brains, and we've responded to it in a very functional kind of a way instead of from our hearts. We personally do this in our life in that we use our intellect, our brain, to protect us, to try to figure things out and predict the future. And yet, as I mentioned before, the big mistake in that is that we actually walk through life backwards. We look at the past and we assume it's going to be the same as the future. But it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. And it probably won't, in fact. So then, why do we do this? Why do we go into these stories? And I think a lot of it is to fill up the mystery, the emptiness, the unfamiliarity. We have trouble sitting in mystery because, as I mentioned earlier, we're not encouraged to do it growing up. And so we make up all these stories and it's like it fills up the spaciousness. But it causes this sense of tiredness and overwhelm from the busyness in our minds. You know, the challenge this week for you in this area is to notice when you're making up a story about the future and instead put it in the mystery sack and just accept I'm here now and I'm going to respond to this moment and see how that unfolds. See, and we do this hundreds of times a day. We make up stories about the future. So you just see the story, keep putting it down, come back in the present. See the story, put it down, come back in the present. That's the challenge in this area this week, is to watch out for the stories. And the third aspect of having mystery in our life is that it helps us not to avoid the unfamiliar. It helps us to not avoid taking risks. It helps us to not stay safe. And it helps us not to avoid the new. And this leads us to greater freedom to grow and explore new things. Now, as I mentioned, most of us kind of set our life on autopilot. We just go through the motions of our day. We've been doing the same thing, more or less, for 10 or 20 years. We have the same things for breakfast. We drive, you know, the same way to work. We do the same things at work. We even greet people the same way. You know, has anyone ever said to you, good day, and you say, very well, thank you? We have these habitual responses where we're not really alive. We're just going through the motions, and that's a great danger because we can actually miss our life by living on that autopilot. And what we tend to do is we live in this range of the familiar. Okay? So familiar levels of happiness and misery. We have an upper threshold of happiness. How happy do we let ourselves get before we bring it back down again? And then how miserable do we let ourselves sink before we start taking some action and pick ourselves up and get going again? And that range that we stay in is the familiar zone. And mystery is unknown and unknowable. So when we accept mystery into our life, it allows us to step outside of what we call our comfort zone. But it's really the uncomfortable comfort zone. Like we stay in situations that we're not happy in. Relationships, jobs, where we live, what we do. Well, lots and lots of things. We stay in those situations that are uncomfortable, you know, like they're just not pleasant to be in, but they're familiar to us. And so we stick in there because we're afraid of the unfamiliar. And that fear of the unfamiliar is a really primary one. If you think about, you know, growing up in a jungle with tigers and lions and things, it makes sense for a kid to stay in the village, to stay near the familiar, mum and dad, to stick in close. And so within us we have this primal fear of the unfamiliar, and we really need to master that in order to live our life fully, to keep on extending ourselves and learning new things, because whenever you learn something new, you go into the unfamiliar. You have to, because it's unknown, because you're learning it for the first time. So you have to learn how to step out of what's safe and familiar for us. But our ego is constantly saying, stay safe, don't take a risk, stick with what you know. And the reason for that is that your ego's primary directive, its purpose, is survival. Your ego's purpose is to help you to survive. And the best way that you've got the greatest possibility of surviving is to keep doing the same thing. Because you've been doing it and you survived this far. But the ego doesn't care about happiness or fulfillment or success. Its interest is survival. And it does this dumb thing. It says, just keep on doing the same thing. It's worked so far. You've got managed to survive this far. Okay? And so we have this constant pull in there that we have to learn to look in the face of and rise above. And that is your ego's fear of dying. And that fear of dying is actually real in a way, in that when you change, when you grow, there is a death of the old ego, the old personality, the old identity of who you are. So there's a death, but it's not who you are at your essence. Who you are at your essence is still alive. In fact, you've become a bigger being when you've stepped out of that small container that you've been holding yourself in. So often we have trouble sitting with this unfamiliar, and we're afraid of it because the mind can't really grasp it. It can't get a handle on it. It can't understand it. And so from that fear of not being able to control it, we make up stories that are scary. So we say, oh, you know, you could make an idiot of yourself. People could laugh at you if you have a go at that and you don't succeed. So you might as well just stay in the job that you've got. Don't, you know, put yourself out. Don't get up and make a speech or step up into whatever it is that your next level of growth is. No, don't risk that. Just stay where we are. Stay with the familiar. So, you know, what keeps us stuck there is our unwillingness to face the fear. It's not the fear of the unfamiliar that keeps us stuck. It's our unwillingness to feel that fear. And if we took action that was outside of our normal comfort range, it would create fear in us. And so one aspect of emotional intelligence is a capacity to manage this emotion that comes up. And one of my definitions for courage is the willingness to follow our heart. So courage isn't the absence of fear, it's the willingness to take action in the face of fear. And following our heart is often a scary thing to do. So sometimes we talk about it's like standing in a bucket of shit. It smells, but it's warm and it's familiar. And when you step outside of that bucket, it's cold. It feels foreign. It's strange. It's weird. It's new. And it's a little bit scary because it's unfamiliar to us. It's also a little bit exciting because there's the potentiality of something new that can unfold. So a question that I ask you to consider is, what have you been saying you're going to do but have done nothing about? What have you been saying, oh yes, I'll do that. I must get round to doing that. I must ring that person up, or I'm going to put an application in for that job, or I think I'll go and talk to some real estate agents about that property, or go to the bank or the accountant. What is it that you've been putting off? And most of us know instantly what that is. Something pops up straight away. There's a lot of kind of guilty looking faces here right now. But we're all a little bit like that. And this is an opportunity to ask yourself, what is it that I've been avoiding? Because mostly, like 99% of these fears are actually not dangerous. They're not going to kill us. They're just a little bit scary. And so it's really empowering to distinguish between something that's actually potentially dangerous to us and something that's just scary. If you can make that distinction, it gives you often permission to step in and face that fear. Do something that's a bit scary, but probably not at all dangerous. And we have this old saying which says, living with the dread of not knowing is usually worse than the fear of knowing the worst. Okay, so that living in dread has the capacity, cold dread, to affect us so deeply. And often when we turn and we face what we've been afraid of, we kind of find, oh, is that all that it was about? Is that all it amounted to? Almost a disappointment. So, worth remembering, nothing changes if nothing changes. And there's a good point to suffering. I think sometimes people in personal development think it should be all easy and no effort and comfortable if we're doing it right. But that's just not the reality. The reality is that if we're growing and going into new territory, it's going to be uncomfortable. It's going to be frightening and it's going to be difficult at the start. But then it's going to get better. Most of the time get better than it's ever been before because we're stretching out and following our hearts. So here's a couple of things to do. Don't get lost in the stories. Distinguish between scary and dangerous. Take action in the face of fear. Listen to and trust your heart. Be willing to fail. Drop rackets. Now, a racket is a story that you tell yourself to give yourself permission to stay where you are and not to do it. Like, I didn't get up to go for a run this morning because it was too cold. It's a racket, okay? If you had to get up because your house was on fire, you would have been up and out of there in 10 seconds. Or if one of your best friends rang you up and said, I really need your help, I'm stuck, you'd be up and out of bed straight away. So just watch out for the rackets that keep you stuck. And if you are scared, it's okay to get help. You know, reach out for help. Ask for some more advice if you don't feel ready to make a decision or to move forward. It's a sign often that we need to get more information. And then just get going and do it. I think the capacity to recognize that the unfamiliar has almost innately built into it this level of fear, and see it for that, enables us to take action to move forward into new territory. Which brings us to the last aspect of the importance of having mystery in our lives, and that is that mystery is actually a gateway to our spiritual aspect. Anybody who claims to tell you what God is doesn't actually know God, because God is an experience beyond words. Apparently, Carl Jung was asked one day if he believes in God, and his answer was, "No, I don't believe in God, I experience God." And so the essence of who we are is beyond the label, the finite label of words that we can put on that experience, and therefore puts it outside of our mental capacity to understand it and describe it accurately. Poetry comes close, but all words in reality just point towards what we're trying to describe, this infinite, expansive, timeless, ageless beingness that's at our core. So the nature, the very nature of our spiritual essence, our God self, the divine, is outside. It's beyond our mental comprehension. So we know God in our hearts. We know the divine life, creative force, whatever we want to call it. When we embrace mystery, we're open to that sense of wonder, that sense of awe, that sense of expansion that we might feel when we look up at the stars on a clear night, or we look out on the ocean and see the great expanse of the sea, or we're on the top of the mountains looking out over the mountain grandeur. We get that sense of expansion, of timeless beingness. But, you know, most of us, instead of going to that, we identify ourselves as this personality, this being that has a body and emotions and thoughts, and we tend to assume, because we live in a material world, that this object, my body and my thoughts, is who I am. And the more we identify with that, the more insecure we become, because obviously our body changes all of the time. You once had a child's body, and then an adolescent's body, and now an adult's body probably. And which one is the real you if you are your body? And what happens if you change your mind, if you are your thoughts? And clearly your emotions come and go, so they can't be you also. But so many of us identify who we are as our personality, including the traits that we have, like I'm a clever person, or I'm a kind person, I'm a capable person. And what happens is we go in a little crisis of being when that collapses. Like if I'm a clever person, if I'm a clever man, what happens when I don't know the answer? Who am I then? Or if I make it wrong, if I make a mistake, who am I now? I don't seem such a clever person anymore. So, you know, we kind of panic inside when that happens. Or if I'm a kind, caring person and somebody says to me, you're mean and cruel, who am I now? No. So we get fraught with these difficulties when we identify ourselves as this thing. And mystery opens the doorway to being something outside of what we can tangibly grasp onto. And if we can embrace this aspect in our life, then in these moments where our ego collapses, we realize there's still something there. And that is an opportunity to look and see. When you don't know the answer, when you can't fix or help somebody else and you'd love to help them, whatever it is that you pride yourself on, when that collapses, the spiritual question is, what remains? Because the simple answer is, I don't exist. In that moment, it looks like I don't exist. I'm nothing. I'm annihilated. But who's the one who's observing this annihilation? What still remains? And what still remains is who you really are. In the East, a lot of the teachings say that the fundamental truth is that there is emptiness or spaciousness, if you like, that at the depth, at the bottom level of all experiences, if you keep going deeper and deeper, then what we discover is emptiness. And if we think about it, a cathedral, a grand cathedral in Europe, say, very old cathedral, they are full, great big space of emptiness and silence. Gateways to spiritual experiences, sitting in emptiness and stillness and silence, opens the door to mystery and to spiritual experiences. But again, because we live lives that are so busy, we're used to filling up our days all of the time, what happens for us is we become unfamiliar with sitting, with being in stillness and silence. And so when we find ourselves in times of stillness and silence, we actually panic a little bit because it's unfamiliar. Not because it's dangerous, but we feel uneasy. And you know, a common occurrence of that is when we wake up at night time. It's very dark, it's very quiet, and it's very still. And often you'll find this little edginess about that because we don't allow much space for that in our everyday life. We don't go to church. Most of us don't go to church. We don't have time when we sit in stillness and silence. And so it becomes foreign to us, and there's a little ego panic that happens when we find ourselves in those moments. And part of why we panic is because we don't recognize that those moments are actually very precious. That space of stillness and silence is actually the doorstep of opening into something much, much deeper and much, much profound about who we really are. And so the value of regular meditation is that we become familiar with stillness and silence, with being in stillness and silence, and that actually allows us to relax into the experience because it's familiar to us, and then go through that slight discomfort when the ego is falling away in that space and we're starting to open into something that's vaster than our normal association with our identity. Okay, so very important aspect of mystery is to allow space for us to be in stillness and silence on a regular basis, and to recognize that when we're in those spaces, that actually is a good thing. And most people will panic in that space, and just a fraction of degree away from really opening to that emptiness or spaciousness is terror. It's terror. We're terrified of it. As soon as we have some stillness or quietness, we quickly fill it up. We fill it up with thinking. We create a story. We start obsessing about something. We go, whatever we do, we keep busy just to move away from it. But if we can just recognize this space of stillness and silence, of mystery as an opening to something that's below it, that's actually much, much grander than everything else. And that is who we really, really are. Then we can have the, gives us the permission to actually drop into that space. And then, when we manage to do that, we experience the great joke, which is when we're on the other side, this side of emptiness, it looks like on the other side of emptiness, I'll be nothing. But the great joke is that when we go through that stillness and silence, through that emptiness, we actually find fulfillment. We actually find wholeness and completion, the very opposite of what we were expecting. So what this does is it reminds us that we are spiritual beings having a human experience. And the problem for most of us is that we've lost our capacity to be with this emptiness, with this mystery. And so there's great value in reasserting the importance of mystery in our life from a spiritual perspective. And so Osho had a little poem that I really liked to complete this presentation. And he says, "The indications that you are on the right path are very simple. Your tensions will start disappearing. You will become more and more cool. You will become more and more calm. You will find beauty in things which you have never ever conceived could be beautiful. The smallest things will start having tremendous significance. The whole world will become more and more mysterious every day. You will become less and less knowledgeable, more and more innocent. Just like a child running after butterflies or collecting seashells on the beach, you will feel life not as a problem, but as a gift, as a blessing, as a benediction."